At Java Republic, we need coffee partners to make the coffee we sell absolutely exquisite. We also need to understand the market and try and get insights. David Barry has been running three fantastically successful restaurants for over 30 years. So, David, how long do we know each other?
Well, we know each other over 30 years because I remember you arriving in the door with our existing Bewley's rep at the time, and you were going to take over from her, as I recall, if I remember rightly.
And did you like me? Be honest.
Well, the girl you were replacing was a lot better looking than you, David.
Okay. Other than that, do you remember my personality or what I said? Because I don't remember.
You were very brash and very different to your average rep, but you were interesting. You were interesting.
Okay. So, we moved to you when? What year? Do you remember? Because you seem to be better on dates than I am.
Gosh, that's a very good question. I would say you were trading maybe 2 or 3 years before we moved to you, because your opposition kept trying to sell the coffee so cheap to us to keep you out.
They had a few sweeteners.
Yes. Okay. Yeah.
And you know why I rang you one day?
Well, you used to come in quite regularly with your now wife, so you kept in touch all the time, and eventually I kind of felt I really wanted to be doing business with you.
Okay, so this is my memory of it, and this is one that's just come back. I had a little girl called Katie, my wife, and we were having pizza there, and the experience was so good, Clodagh said to me, "You've got to talk to this guy about our coffee. Getting our coffee in here," and I rang you on the Monday or the Tuesday.
Okay.
So that's exactly how it happened.
Right, that sounds plausible, yeah.
So, go back to your early days, because you know my history in coffee. Tell me, you have a degree at a Trinity College.
I had a degree in science from Trinity, physiology, and when I started a master's, which I never finished, but I mean, at the time, like, there was no real work in Ireland, for people of my generation at that time. Margaret Thatcher was Prime Minister of the UK, and emigrating to the UK wasn't really on either, because the UK was on its knees. The only places that you could really get work was Germany, and I had worked in Germany one summer as a student, and I didn't really take to it, so that didn't enthuse. So myself and a fellow graduate from Science and Trinity, we're actively looking for different business ideas, and we pursued various avenues before the idea came up of doing a pizza restaurant.
And why food?
I loved eating out. I always found eating out in restaurants to be really exciting and inspiring. And when I was in America as a student, which I was on a couple of occasions, I just really adored pizza, and I couldn't understand why you couldn't get pizza worth the name in Ireland. Or
there was absolutely no pizza in.
There was two places. There was Flanagan's in O'Connell Street, which is remarkably still there. And there was a place called Pizza Cabin that a guy called Pat Grace, who was more famous for fried chicken, had in Fisborough, and I think he might have had another location elsewhere. I've forgotten.
What was the startup cost?
The startup cost.
Yeah.
I'd say the startup cost was about £60,000,
which was huge.
It was kind of shoestring at the time. Because we were starting from absolute like zero. We also had no experience in the food business. It wasn't as if we had worked in restaurants or whatever. So we were learning on the job, and we had to learn quick.
Okay, it didn't burn cash the first 3 months, 2 months?
We didn't. Like most entrepreneurs, I suppose, we didn't pay ourselves for quite some time.
Okay. How long?
And I'd say it must have been 6-9 months probably before we paid ourselves. And for quite a period of that time, I lived above the restaurant in Drumcondra, in a place that initially didn't even have a shower and a toilet. I used to have to use the customer toilets. But you'll do anything, you know, when you're starting off.
So within a year, it was successful.
Yeah, the rate of growth was really fantastic. I mean, I remember my father, who helped us out a bit at the beginning. He just used to start laughing because every week I'd come home for a visit or whatever, and I'd say, we did another record, and we did another record, and he just thought, it was insane.
At any stage, they say we put you through school and college, and you ended up making pizzas. I mean, you're a disappointment, David. Did he ever say that to you?
No, he never saw it that
never
way.
Said
no,
it.
No,
ever?
No, not at all. Well, if he thought it, he never said it.
Okay, the partnership, it didn't work.
No. I mean, hospitality, restaurants, it's a tough business. It's a very antisocial business. You know, the weekend is your busy time. And Garrett, my partner, was a very serious and very competitive sailor. He ultimately sailed in the Barcelona Olympics. So he wanted to be off at weekends, and that just wasn't really compatible with being in the restaurant business. Okay. So eventually we went our separate ways.
Okay. Now, the pizza business, and I get back to Gotham, because Gotham, we're in Gotham in Stillorgan, but Gotham in South Ann Street it's iconic at this stage. We'll go back to you were the first into the pizzas. I have kids that order Domino's pizzas, and I would never put your pizzas on the same level, particularly the Brooklyn Bridge, which I've lived with, and I do not change my pizza. Why did you never jump onto the phenomenal growth of home deliveries, and all of the other chains, the bases and all this? There's a massive growth in pizzas in Ireland. Of all the sections of Asian and fast food, the pizza, you didn't want to jump in, or did you not clarify the opportunity?
I think really there was a couple of things. First of all, we felt that that our product didn't really travel all that well because of the style of the pizza dough. And then secondly, the idea of getting involved with recruiting and retaining drivers who would only be busy some of the time really didn't appeal. And the other side of that was that we were so busy that we focused on growing the business and looking after our own product, and we didn't feel that we kind of absolutely needed that that side of things. Now, having said which, I think what's happened in recent years, where you've got people like Deliveroo and Just Eat taking the headache of the drivers and the whole driver side of things out of the equation, I think that's an appealing scenario from a restaurant's point of view. It's very expensive. The customer doesn't understand how much that the restaurant is paying for the service from Deliveroo or Just Eat, but it is a nice add-on to your business, and we have started to do that now in all three outlets, and we've been impressed by the rate of growth there and the appeal of it. But logistically, in terms of us having our own people doing it, I still wouldn't want to really get into that area.
So you're not going to take independence to the south side?
I might leave that to the next generation.
Okay. Now, go on to the next generation. You met Jackie in the restaurant business.
Yeah.
She worked for
you. She was one of our first employees, and her sister, Louise.
Okay, two questions. The first one is it easy to work together in the restaurant environment? And the second question is, would you encourage your own children to go into the restaurant business?
Okay, well, I suppose Jackie might have her own opinion in terms of working together. There's pluses and minuses. Again, as I touched on earlier on, the hospitality business is a tough business in terms of the hours that you work and you work when other people are socializing, etc. So it's kind of not that unusual for restaurateurs to end up in a personal relationship with somebody in the business as well. But we try a lot of the time to take separate roles, and we would we've always avoided working together on the floor of one of the restaurants, so to speak. Otherwise, yeah, we try and keep the roles pretty separate, and it works pretty well. And you know, we've been doing it for a long time now, so you know, hopefully it'll continue to work well.
The second part, the kids.
The kids, well, my oldest kid is 19, so I think it's probably a little bit early to make that call. The business is completely different to what it was when I went into it. So would I encourage them into it? I wouldn't discourage them, but I would certainly flag to them the implications of a business like the hospitality trade. But I do think that, like, you know, like the rate at which and the frequency with which Irish people and worldwide people eat out compared to, you know, the mid 80s is just, you know, there's no comparison. So it is possible to run the business in a different way than it was when we were starting off. Yeah, I wouldn't rule it out, but I wouldn't be pushing them into it either. I definitely wouldn't do that.
Okay, Gotham South, which I'm much more familiar with because I live, or I'm in town, city centre a lot. There's Gotham South, there's Independent, and there's you reinvented Gotham 3 years ago, and you really invested heavily in South Ann Street.
Yeah, well, I mean, I suppose I'd like to think that we do that, you know, frequently enough, but we did a kind of a significant makeover and tried to kind of bring the look in up to date.
I don't want to go into the financials because sure. Unless you want to tell us just how much was the investment and how easy was it to get the ideas and where did you travel to get to actually say, right, that's the feel I want from it, that's the spec, and that's the investment to... The investment is either to keep the existing business or to grow the sales. Was it as easy as that, or where do you get the ideas?
Well, I mean, we would travel quite a bit, and we would always be looking at other restaurants and other ideas. And maybe not just restaurants. It might be bars. It might be hotels. It could be just retail that you'd pick up something and you'd go, you know what, we could twist up and use it in a different way or whatever. I would be a really strong believer that you cannot stand still in business. I just think if you stand still, you're losing your position. And you know, customers like reinvention. They like things to change. And I think subconsciously maybe they think they don't. And you know, and they don't want to find that they go in and that their favorite dish is no longer on the menu or whatever. But if you don't change, they get bored and they probably decide they want to go to the new hipper place down the road. So I think you have to keep moving and you have to keep evolving. And you know what? It's not just about customers. It's also about staff, because the staff will get bored. The staff won't develop. So if you want them to develop and you want them to stay with you, you need to kind of put challenges in front of them and you know... create a situation for where there's learnings for them, okay. And that's really really vital. I you've heard me say this before, but I mean, I always think that the adage about if it ain't broke, don't fix it is just so far wrong when it comes to business. I just think it's totally okay. Rubbish.
Okay, there's a couple of questions. I came in here this morning and I met Niall, who knows me for 26 years. That rarely happens to me as much, and they're in the same team, the same environment. How much time do you spend keeping these guys? Because the same team are in Gotham Cafe in South Ann Street all the time. Mm-hmm. Same people look after us as a family unit going in, and they know where we love to sit, and they look after us exceptionally well, even though we know each other. But even Milano's around the corner, you're going to have a Jamie's by the sounds of it coming into city centre. You're going to have in that area, there's another pizzeria on Suffolk Street. There's so much competition coming into that centre. Is it reliant on the staff, the menu? Is it the service? What's the, in terms of how you work it out, what is the key?
Well, I mean, I suppose it's easy to say, but it's about all of it. I mean, you know, it's a package, really. Like, you know, we're in competition for staff as well as for customers. That's the reality now. It's very important that you, you know, you treat people right and that you respect them as individuals if you want to retain them as part of your team. I would always feel and always have felt, you know, that you shouldn't be getting people to do something, whether it be the hours that they work or whether it's the particular job you ask them to do. Don't get them to do something that you wouldn't do yourself. If you wouldn't be prepared to do it, why expect them to be prepared to do it? And we would always have approached employment that way. I mean, not all of our, we don't retain everybody. I'm not trying to pretend that we do, but our core people, yeah, I think we have a pretty good record on
retaining. And do you bonus people. The team, or is it?
Sorry, I missed that.
Do you bonus the team? Is there a team? Is there a reward system in each individual cafe?
That's kind of discretionary as to what way that works. Yeah, okay. It varies a bit.
So, okay, we've covered a lot of the background of how you got into the business. Have you ever been asked to invest by another individual or a couple to invest privately in a restaurant business? And would you?
No, I've never actually been asked to do that. I mean, there's numbers of people who have worked for us who've gone on to open their own places, but they've never asked for backing from me. Would I do it? I'd weigh it up. I might. I wouldn't rule it out.
Okay. And the guys or girls who've jumped out on their own and been trained by you, have they opened up within the vicinity of your other store?
No, not really. No. I mean, there's a pizzeria in Auckland, in New Zealand, which is the former manager of Gotham Cafe.
Is it good?
Well, I've never been, but I'd certainly recognise a lot of the pizzas on the menu.
Okay. So,
but we still text back and forth. I was texting him on Saturday during the rugby.
Okay. So there, coming to the end. If you were to give any advice to anybody hoping to get into the restaurant business, because what I've seen in the recession in the last couple of years, it's nearly closed up again, but there was a gap. There was no, you didn't have to pay the enormous rents we're back at, which is the 2006-07 level. You didn't have to pay, nearly have to pay to buy a store at the moment. And then the fit out costs are back where they used to be, and the capex is just, it's open-ended. So the three challenges to the existing restaurant business at the moment, or to anybody trying to get into the restaurant business. Do you see casual dining? Do you prefer a cafe model? You're a full-blown restaurant in two, and then there's a restaurant stroke takeout model, which is different. So you cover two of the three. Is it easier to set up a cafe model, which is casual, very casual dining? Or give me the three challenges that you think that are facing the industry, because it seems to be evolving into even more difficult with staff and rent again.
Yeah, the foremost challenge facing the restaurant industry is staffing, and in particular the chef side of it. The industry, you know, has a historical problem with a perception, which is a valid perception far too often, that the hours that are demanded of chefs are, you know, off the wall, and that means that it's a non-attractive business for people to go into. I mean, there was a headline in the paper last week where I think it was one of the government ministers was suggesting that we could, you know, be in full employment within a year in Ireland. In that scenario, the only way that we're going to be able to get chefs into the hospitality industry, because of its image, is to bring them in from abroad, and I think the industry needs to, you know, to really sort that side of it out.
And are they listening?
I think they are, but like one of the interesting things about a lot of the new restaurants, you know, particularly in Dublin, that have opened in the last 5 years, a huge number of them are chef-led. But what's interesting is that they all seem to have gone down the road of only opening 5 days a week, because that, you know, they understand that if they only open 5 days a week, it means that they can give their team a proper life outside work, and it means that they have much less of a team as well. Now that's a little bit counterbalanced by the fact that they have to have a viable rent roll in order to be able to be only open 5 days a week. I mean, we couldn't do that in the city centre, for example, because we have to get the trade in order to pay that sort of level of rent. But I think, but that's a side issue though. I think the scenario of how the business goes into the future, with the demand that I think is there from the customer, I think people worldwide have got into a thing of that they want to be able to eat out, not just on a special occasion basis, they want to do it regularly. So the demand is going to be there, but how are we going to staff that demand?
So the RAI, which is probably the most vocal body within the hospitality industry, is very strong. They can do everything to allow, maybe it's not the immigrants coming in, but are you telling us they're barred from bringing in qualified or even semi-qualified or not qualified chefs?
It's extremely limited what you can do now, and it was made much more limited during the worst of the recession, which is kind of not surprising and understandable,
but because of unemployment.
Yeah, because of unemployment. But that, you know, we're gone. That's gone now, and.
I've been in a lot of kitchens.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen what chefs have to do. Mm. Why would you ever want to be a chef?
Well, I think it's a vocation in a lot of ways. You know, you need to be passionate about food. And you know, but you know what? There's a great, it's not just on the chefing side, on the floor side of the restaurant. There's a great buzz in the restaurant business. I mean, like, you know, there's obviously quiet times, but like when it's busy, the satisfaction that you get out of a well-executed service and seeing, you know, hearing the buzz of happy customers talking in the restaurant and people enjoying themselves, it's an exciting business to be in as well.
Second last question. Would you encourage a young couple or partners or individuals to go into the restaurant business?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, like, you know, but you need to have a passion for it, because like if you don't have a passion for it, if you just look at it as a balance sheet exercise, in terms of, you know, can I make a living out of this, etc., it's far too tough a business, you know. And I mean, like, even after 33 years in the business or whatever, you know, I'll still get the phone call on a Sunday afternoon, you know, or a text on a Sunday afternoon to tell us X or Y, you know, it happened yesterday, you know. So, like, it's a 7-day business. So if you don't have a passion for it and if it's not a vocation for you, you're going to struggle.
So impossible to bring up a family.
No, it's not impossible, but it is hard and it's different.
Yeah. Okay, last one. We traveled to Haiti a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Probably one of the worst coffee trips I've ever been involved in. You saw what we saw in Haiti. As if we could transport the two of us, so you'd have to be stuck with me in a plane for a couple of hours, where would you go to get the most inspiration in the food business connected to where you think that your business is going to go? And where is it that... what university or what city is leading food at the moment in the world?
Okay, I mean, to be honest, I think you've got a bunch of choices, you know, but like...
Favorite, give me your top one. Only one choice.
Well, if I've only one choice, I'm always going to say New York. That's why you're sitting in a restaurant called Gotham South. I mean, like, New York has just so many restaurants, and there's always new things happening, and there's like food trends. You know, if they don't happen first in New York, they get to New York second, but a lot of the time they happen first in New York. So you're always going to be inspired by what you see there.
David, how? In the casual dining, how have you seen the growth and the development of coffee? How important is it for the regular customer coming into your outlets?
Oh, it's increasingly important, and it has changed so much. I mean, you know, like when we started off in business, I mean, you know, it was exotic almost to have, you know, a filtered Bewley's coffee as opposed to having, you know, Nescafe instant coffee. And like, you know, now you, like, if you're not providing, you know, a high standard of ground coffee that you're doing yourselves into cappuccinos and espressos, etc., you're just going to lose out, because the younger generation, through their own travels, be it to Australia or be it to North America or whatever, they expect that all the time, and they expect it to be of a very high standard.
Okay. Thank you very much.